Greetings to the broadest audience in the country. This is Jason Troyer and Joe Scott filling in for Bob Enyart, who is America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host.
And I agree with him.
Absolutely. We wouldn't be here if we didn't agree with
him. That's for sure.
So Bob, of course, is on vacation, taking the family up to parts unknown up north, heading to Canada. I don't know why you want to go to Canada, but... anyway, that's where he's headed. And
I wonder if they'll let him back in.
Well, they have an agreement. We don't even need a passport. I did freak out a friend of mine who was going to Alaska, and he was getting ready to leave in maybe 2 days. I said, oh, did you get your passport and everything? He said, well, passport? I don't need a passport. I said, you're leaving the country, aren't you? Oh, my goodness. I guess I am. But, of course, we don't need passports to get from here to Canada or even to Mexico, although that will probably change in time, but...
maybe.
You don't need anything to get in from Mexico, I guess, so, or to get into Mexico. But that does bring up one thing that I wanted to talk about. When I first meet somebody, instead of asking him the generic question, what do you do for a living, and trying to find out something about him or her, I like to ask, where did you go on your last vacation?
Why, Jay?
Because a lot of people have a job, have a career that they don't necessarily like, but that's where they went to college or that's what they went to college for, that's their career, and they have to put food on the table, provide for the family.
So you're saying you don't really find out much about them from a career?
Exactly. But if somebody to ask me, you know, what I did for a living, my job right now is not who I am, and you really shouldn't derive your self-worth from your career anyway, but you find out more about someone from where they went on their last vacation a lot of times. So my last vacation, I went to a family reunion in Indiana, and I went to the Operation Save America rally in Jackson, Mississippi.
So that tells me that you're a family-oriented nut.
I guess. So, well, you didn't even hear that when I was at the family reunion, I spent time with 25 of my cousins.
25 of them, huh?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I have about 30 on just my mom's side of the family. So
wow.
They come from big families, so that can spur conversation right there. And, of course, when you talk about Operation Save America, if someone's not familiar with Operation Save America, you can start talking about that. So, of course, if someone asks Bob, where did you go on your last vacation, Bob generally doesn't go on kind of mindless vacations where you just sit at the beach and do nothing, which is all fine because you need to decompress every once in a while. But He goes to the Grand Canyon. He meets authors that he enjoys, their books. And, of course, this time he's going up to Montana to see the soft tissue that has survived for millions of years and the bones of a dinosaur. Yeah, right. And meeting an atheist in Seattle. And so
I wish I could be there for that.
He has very interesting vacations.
Yes.
So where did you go on your last vacation, Joe?
Well, I've been gone most of the summer. Partially, I was in Florida for a sad occasion. My brother was killed in May, and we had a memorial service for him in Florida in July.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of interesting things happened there. But the best that came out of that was my parents and my nephew got saved.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was a very sad and hurtful time, but I did just get back a couple of days ago from San Diego, and I spent 10 days with 5 of my grandsons.
Wow.
I only have grandsons. I have 7 of them.
Lucky
and 5,
you.
I know.
Well, I shouldn't say that.
That's true. But they had a wonderful time. So did I. And my little 6-year-old grandson learned to surf.
Cool.
So he's up on a longboard, and he's doing really well. So
see,
I'm
and so
amazed.
You get insight into a person right away just by finding out what they did on vacation. But now that you're back to work, your day job, you had an interesting morning at Planned Parenthood, which is the main abortion clinic here in Denver. So why don't you tell us what happened this morning at 20th and Vine?
Oh, it was a frustrating morning, to say the least. It was very, very busy. Many, many people went in to take RU-486, a lot of them this morning. Excuse me.
And RU-486 is a chemical abortion.
Right.
You take a pill, and then you can leave without going through the
surgical
invasive surgical procedure of sticking a vacuum cleaner in a woman and ripping the baby apart that way.
Right. They don't tell the girls that 6 women in the United States this year have died, or in the last 2 years have died from RU-486, nor did they tell them 900 have had very severe symptoms afterwards. But one of the clients walking in, who's taking his wife in, yelled back, "I understand you guys. I agree with you. I'm studying to be a pastor."
Wow.
Which just floored us.
Yeah.
And he claimed to be the son of a rather prominent person in Colorado Springs. Whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. But he did know the Bible. And he did have all kinds of reasons why I shouldn't judge him, why I shouldn't be able to, why I don't understand his reasonings.
And you've been doing this, what, a week, 2 weeks, and so you don't understand what these women are going through?
Yeah, that's true.
Now, you've been doing this for decades, and you know exactly the excuses they give. And the real life drama that a lot of times these women go through, their husbands or their boyfriends say they're going to beat them up or going to kill them. And actually in America, that's one of the most dangerous positions you can be in, is being a pregnant mom when your boyfriend or your husband doesn't want you to be pregnant. And we have, Scott Peterson and so many other cases where a pregnant mom will be killed or hurt because the husband or boyfriend doesn't want the baby in his life.
Well, the highest rate of death in pregnant women is from murder.
Mm-hmm.
That's the highest rate in the country. So,
and he wasn't threatening to beat up this.
No. They came to this logically and calmly. He was one of those very calm, sensible people who considered themselves more rational than us. And,
mm-hmm.
He just had excuses why this child had to die and why God is going to forgive him.
And so you said he knew the passages about not judging, but he didn't know the passages about God hates the hands that shed innocent blood. He couldn't pull those out. Thou shalt not murder. That was foreign to him.
Well, no, they weren't foreign. His answer was God killed the Canaanites.
Mm-hmm.
So God's a murderer, too.
Well, that's an easy way to justify your sin, is by saying, well, God's sinning, too. I don't think that's going to fly very well when you stand before God and you say, well, I can kill innocent people because you kill innocent people, too.
Well, we asked him that, and his answer was, I'll have to face God. What's your problem? Why are you so concerned when I'm the one that's going to have to pay the penalty for this?
Well,
my answer was, there's an innocent child here, that his life is in the balance, and I'm going to speak for him because he doesn't have a voice, and his father is a murderer.
Yeah, and he's going to be a really effective pastor when he goes to his parishioners or when he goes to the general public and says, well, first of all, he won't say anything because in his mind he's going to think, well, they're going to stand before God, and so therefore why should I do anything about what they're doing? I mean, that's going to be a very, very effective witness as a pastor. But unfortunately, that's the state of the Christian church, is that you can justify almost anything. And I didn't hear the justification, and maybe he said it, of, well, I can do whatever I want because God will forgive me, and so therefore I'm not going to lose my salvation. And he won't, and we agree with that. You're not going to lose your salvation. And if you're a Christian, God will forgive you of that sin. But there are earthly consequences, and there are eternal consequences when you take a life of an innocent, preborn little baby. Because we know the after effects that mothers suffer with alcohol and drug abuse and depression and all these other backlash of problems that these women have, as well as increased risk of breast cancer and so many other things. So the fact that God will forgive them of this sin, of this crime, that's not even an issue that we really debate. They use that as justification all the time, and we really don't even dispute that. But just because God forgives you of something doesn't mean that you're not going to have consequences because of that.
Well, Jason, I questioned his salvation because he was just too complacent.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really are a saved person, killing your child, you're not going to take it like drinking a Coke. And I think we need to make clear that we work outside on the streets of Planned Parenthood, not inside, because we wouldn't want anyone to think that we're working in that horrible building.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, anyway, Jason, that was very frustrating. It was typical, unfortunately, typical. It's not the first time. I'd say of all the cars that I saw, maybe 30, 35 go in this morning, oh, a good fourth of them had either a rosary hanging or a Christian fish on the back of their car, all the epitome of blaspheming the Lord's name, just taking his name in vain.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, but that's the state of America and the state of Christianity, that people claim the name of Christ, but it has absolutely no effect on their life.
None.
There's no evangelism. There's no mentorship or discipleship in these churches. It's just a dead church. And of course, Europe and England have gone through that decades and decades ago. And it's just an absolutely dead church. And there's a little bit of a spark, a little bit of a fire still in the American church. And we're going to talk about that, I think, in 2 days from now. We're going to talk about evangelism and how do you witness and how do you use the law versus grace to talk to an unsaved person. I think that's going to be a fascinating show. But do people in America, do the Christians even evangelize? And the answer is no, because they themselves are dead. They go to abortion clinics, they do all these immoral things, and then on Sunday they put on their nice clothes, but their hands are stained with blood.
Oh, they have cool bumper stickers.
Yeah.
You
know. And they listen to the uplifting, prosperous message of TV evangelists and mega churches, but they don't really read the Bible, they don't understand the Bible, they don't follow the Bible, but it's good motivation for them.
And it makes them feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, all right, let's get into the news of the day. Another tragic tale from Planned Parenthood. But how many baby saves do we have so far this year?
About 48.
48. All right, yeah. So we want to end on some good news
there.
All right, so let's get back into more bad news. Because when you live in an ungodly culture, it's generally bad news that you read. When people say that people are generally good, you go to the Drudge Report, you're not going to find story after story of people being good. You're going to find story after story of people being bad and being sinful. So, all right, what's the first sin we're going to talk about today?
Well, it's the Jerusalem. They're planning a gay pride parade now. This open house organization has decided to hold a gay pride parade in Jerusalem. Isn't that something?
Yeah, and they were going back and forth for that for almost a year, I think. But they finally buckled to the politically correct pressure and, you know, you can't fight enemies from every angle. So they're fighting the Palestinians in Gaza. They're fighting the Lebanese up north. And now they're fighting the homosexuals right in the heart of the Holy Land. So
that's right. And I don't know that they're fighting them all that much, Jason.
Yeah, yeah. Battle fatigue probably more than anything.
And then let's talk about what went on in San Diego.
Okay.
They had a gay pride parade in San Diego, which is not unusual. Mm. I've picketed the gay pride in San Diego, that parade, since 1980 until 1997 when I came here. So it's a horrible parade, much more horrible than this one, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
You know. And this year in San Diego, an elementary school marched with their school's banner in front of them in that parade.
Wow.
Can you believe it? I mean, where are you going to find more pedophiles on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon?
But yet we're condemned if we bring up pedophilia anywhere near the homosexual movement. The fact that NAMBLA, the North American Man Boy Love Association, used to, back when they were a little bit more of an outcast movement, the homosexual movement was a little bit more of an outcast movement. NAMBLA used to march under their banner in the gay pride parades in Boston and in New York City. And the Center for Exploited and Missing Children, which is not a Christian organization by any means,
not
religious, they condemned the homosexual parade for doing that. And as well, they should have, because even the ungodly can see the wickedness of the homosexual movement. And now that educators are now marching their kids through the street, enticing these perverts and offering them up, is just amazing.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And our tax dollars support these schools, so people don't forget that.
And even if the kids were blindfolded and they didn't see the environment around them, you're enticing these. And if anybody's ever seen footage of a gay pride parade, it's absolutely a sexually drenched culture there. They are so worked up and so in their lust and in their perversion, and then to put these little kids in their path is absolutely unexcusable. And then, of course, the kids obviously were not blindfolded. They could see the perversion all around them. And the homosexuals are not going to say, oh, there's kids around, let's not show the dykes on bikes. Let's not show the leather-clad half-naked men. Let's not do all these perverted things that we do, because they don't care at all about the kids. They want to desensitize the kids. They want the kids to see their perversion, get it normalized in their psyche, so that way the kids grow up their whole lives and say, yeah, I've seen that. That's no big deal.
Well, also, they're more easily seduced when their sensitivity has been broken down. But this man, his name is James Hartline. He wrote an article. He puts out actions alerts in San Diego to remind the community of what's going on and make them aware of terrible things that are going on there. But what's kind of neat is James was a homosexual.
Wow.
Until 7 years ago, he came out of it. And now he watches these horrible things going on in these gay pride parades with great trepidation and reports on it. And he says that the kids were walking alongside of businessmen promoting pornography. There were nearly nude men and women in graphic sexualized demonstrations right by the kids.
Of course, yeah.
There was also a float called Rent-A-Boy.
Rent-A-Boy, wow.
Rent-A-Boy. It was for a male escort service. Now, what are these schools thinking? What are the teachers thinking? What are their parents thinking? I don't understand this.
And they try, the homosexual community tries to say, well, it's a healthy community. It really has nothing to do with sexual or sex. It's more of a companionship, and it's not a highly sexualized culture. That's what they
Like you to understand. They're just normal people. Yeah, well, straight people don't have a straight parade.
Well,
you know, flaunting.
Just, you know, your average Columbus Day parade or St. Patrick's Day parade or 4th of July parade, they don't have escort services marching in those parades.
And they don't have half-naked people or mostly naked people marching in them, and they don't flaunt children. That's been one of my pet peeves with these things from the very beginning. They have not just marched with children. This is the first time I've heard them marching with an actual school.
Mm-hmm.
But they have children on floats, and they mock us, and they make sexual gestures to us in reference to those children just so that they can incense us. And, you know, a normal, healthy male watching some pervert do that with a child in front of him gets angry.
Sure.
And you have to be able to control yourself.
Righteous indignation is the perfect response to that type of perversion. And I've seen videos of gay pride parades that are shown by the homosexuals. There's a television show here in Denver that they do a weekly wrap-up of the homosexual news. And when they cover the gay pride parade, they go out of their way to show the kids that are watching in the audience as an encouragement for others to bring their kids and to show that they love children, not in the sexual way, but that they that they want the children to be accepting of their lifestyle. And it's just amazing how they exploit these children over and over again in so many different ways to try to justify their lifestyle, to say that it's normal. And, of course, now we have homosexuals adopting more and more and more because nature teaches them that they can't have children of their own. So they try to go around the natural way because that's the way they say that they are. They go around the natural way to procreate, and they adopt kids. And, of course, that gets them cheers and praise from the general
secular
population.
World, yeah,
because they say, well, these kids are so abandoned and so abused and so neglected. It's wonderful that these homosexuals are bringing them into their house and raising these poor kids. Isn't it great that Natalie has two mommies or whoever has two daddies? And it's not, because that's abuse. The fact that they are in a house where there is ungodliness and homosexuality and perversion, that is abusing that child. That is teaching the child that there is no such thing as God, that there is no such thing as right and wrong, and that we can burn in our lusts, we can do whatever we want, and that is abusing that
child.
It's
abusing to the point of perverting them. And we see that on the streets all the time. When we talk to kids, their minds are already twisted.
Mm-hmm.
I know I talked to a young 15-year-old girl for 2 hours trying to straighten her out on what the relationship between a man and a woman is and where she stands in that before she's married. And when I was all finished, she said, well, it's all right to have sex with a girl, isn't it? She had no clue. No clue. It just blew me away.
And that's the justification. As long as I can avoid pregnancy, or as long as I can avoid actually giving birth to the child, then it's okay. So, well, if I get pregnant, then I can have an abortion. Well, if I do this perverted thing over here, then I won't get pregnant to begin with. If I only touch this and that and the other thing, then that's still okay. That's still acceptable. That's not the definition of sex. And, of course, we have our former president to thank for redefining what sex is.
Is.
So, and, yeah, sex is. So, I you know what? I still can't go back to Arkansas for.
No, I know. Not for a long time.
So, but as you mentioned, those two stories about the future pastor coming to Planned Parenthood. We said we had 48 saves so mm-hmm. far this year, and the homosexuality that's going on in Israel and in San Diego, we had the bright spot of a former homosexual leading the battle. So even in this dark and lost world, we have these little bright moments of hope. And of course, that's why we continue to fight, because we can save people. We can save innocent little children, and we can save homosexuals from their perverted
lifestyle.
Through
it all, we can see God's hand. We can see God working in people's lives, and it may be one life at a time. We don't have the outreach of, say, the mass media, the TV stations and stuff, but one life at a time, that's what matters. And Paul was only one man, and he turned the world upside down for Jesus, and we could see that happen in our time.
Yeah. And there's a quote from the movie Gladiator where they're about to go into this big battle scene. And their commander is saying to the troops, what we do in this life echoes through eternity. And I just love that quote, because it not only echoes in eternity in the spiritual realm and the people that we save, but if I influence my child and then my child influences another person, then you can have an influence not simply through yourself, but long after you're gone, you can have an influence. And we actually got an order from a father who is about his wife is about to have a child. But I just wanted to read this. Greetings from Canada. I wanted to thank you so much for your ministry, meaning Bob and Yurt Live. I'm going to be a father in a month and 2 weeks. I realize that our child will eventually have to make the decision whether or not to accept Jesus as his personal savior. But I want to do everything in my power to raise a godly young child. I've been inspired every time I've heard Bob talk about his sons, and I hope that the To Train Up a Child resource will help me train up my child correctly. And that's exactly, we need to have a multi-generational vision for how our families and how our culture needs to be changed. And so what we do certainly echoes through eternity long after we're gone, whether
for
good or for ill.
That's for sure, for good or for ill.
Yeah. Margaret Sanger has quite a legacy.
Doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. We also have some information here on our pro-life President Bush.
Yes, I didn't vote for him.
Well, neither did I. But
well, that's why you're sitting here.
Yeah.
I didn't verbally beat you off.
Yeah, nobody wants to be verbally beaten up by Jason.
That's right.
Have you heard how he can ramble?
Hey,
I know that's nasty.
Let's get to the story. Come on.
Well, President Bush has said it's okay to sell Plan B over the counter. Two 18-year-olds, not the teenagers, though. But what's an 18-year-old?
I think an 18-year-old is a teenager.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's more President Bushisms.
And then the younger ones just need a prescription.
Well, and certainly the younger ones can get a hold of Plan B. It's not. Liquor stores have incredibly stringent laws, and they get in trouble if they sell to minors. But minors get alcohol and cigarettes all the time.
That's
so
right.
A pharmacist is not going to care in the least.
And there are no laws, nothing with any teeth in it, to penalize a pharmacist for not giving it to a minor.
Absolutely.
Or someone under 18. Plus, they have an economic incentive to sell it to them.
Sure.
And so do the pharmaceutical companies. And with no law and no regulation whatsoever, who's going to control it?
Well, certainly not President Bush, because he doesn't care.
No, it's just not a baby as far as he's concerned. In Scotland.
Well, before we get to that, one of the ways, the way that Colorado Right to Life described Plan B was, I think, perfect. And I think one of the reasons why we need a strong pro-life community, both here in Colorado and around the country and nationwide, because when Plan B came out, I don't recall National Right to Life condemning it in harsh words and saying that this is a bad thing.
Oh, you're right.
But the vice president of Colorado Right to Life, when they asked her about it on television, she called Plan B a human pesticide.
That's
and
right.
That's exactly that's right. what it is. And that's why we need people to speak boldly and to speak authoritatively, because that's exactly what this is. And so President Bush, our pro-life president, just unleashed a human pesticide on America.
Into our society and on our young people, which is despicable. And even in Scotland in 1999, they made the morning after pill over the counter. And one of the reasons they say it's so important is that it will diminish the number of abortions when it's an abortion itself.
And of course, they say it'll reduce abortions, and what they mean is it will reduce surgical abortions, but even that is not true.
No, because from 1999 to 2005, Scotland had its highest number of abortions ever in 2005.
Yeah, and how can
since
we
1967.
Yeah, and how can we predict that? Because the Surgeon General, is it C. Everett Koop, said if we legalize abortion, we're going to see more and more child abuse and more in murder in the womb begets murder out of the womb. And that's exactly what we saw. The pro-life or the pro-choice mantra for years was every child a wanted child. And so we look and say, okay, how much child abuse was there before 1973? Has that gone down significantly since we started slaughtering children in the womb? And of course it hasn't. It's gone through the roof, and that's exactly what we knew it would do.
It's raised exactly the amount has gone up with the amount of abortions. But also in England, they said there would be less abortion. And of course they've increased by over 100,000 from one year to the next. But this is another interesting thing. Gonorrhea went up 55%. Syphilis went up an enormous percent. So we have a tremendous amount of stuff that
you can't get around God's law. And so when we see more and more wickedness abounding, we know that it's going to have dire consequences to our culture. So we can't stop the fight. And that's why we need your support at Bob and Yurt Live, because we are in this cultural battle. And so we need your help. So give us a call if you want any materials, 1-888-8-NYART. Give us a call, or you can check us out online at kgov.com. And anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, you can go to those websites. You can order material. You can find out how to train up a child. You can inspire that next generation. And we so look forward to hearing from you. And, of course, we need your help as always.
And we're going to go on to Iowa in the next half hour. It's great to work in Iowa with them and get to know the people there. We're excited about that.
Absolutely.
Kgov.com. Enjoy.
All right, Will, what are you doing? We're not starting the show all over again. We're continuing the show. What are you doing? All right, well, welcome to the Iowa audience. We've gotten rid of the Denver audience, and it was actually a very heavy first half hour. And so we want to lighten it up a little bit. And the Pope said we need to laugh. And despite what he says, I actually agree with him, which is amazing. But, even a broken clock is right twice a day. So where do we look for humor? We look to
the public schools.
Public school students. They provide the greatest amount of humor out there. And I printed off a list of a few of the statements made by public school high schoolers. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to get through this list without laughing and not being able to continue, but I'm going to try. So high school, this is high school, secondary school, 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th, 12th grade, people that should know better. These English teachers have collected analogies and metaphors every year, and they share them with other English teachers to show how stupid their students are, I guess to one-up one another. But so I'm going to go ahead and read a list of actual analogies and metaphors that students have tried to use. So she had a deep, throaty, genuine laugh, like that sound a dog makes before it throws up.
I never equated that sound with laughing before, Jason.
Her vocabulary was as bad as, like, whatever.
Yeah. I've heard that before.
Yeah. He was as tall as a 6'3" tree. Oh, the revelation that his marriage of 30 years had disintegrated because of his wife's infidelity came as a rude shock, like a surcharge at a formerly surcharge-free ATM machine.
Oh, wow.
So he's equating an ATM surcharge with infidelity.
And I mean, a 30-year marriage. That's about the importance they would put on marriage anymore today.
But that's as shocking as they get. We live in such a privileged culture. That's the worst thing they could come up with is a surcharge at a formerly surcharge-free ATM. So continuing.
Life is rough.
Oh, man. The little boat gently drifted across the pond exactly the way a bowling ball wouldn't.
Huh?
All right. So the funniest one is the lame duck, and oh, it's hilarious. He was as lame as a duck. Not the metaphorical lame duck either, but a real duck that was actually lame. Maybe from stepping on a landmine or something.
That's a metaphor?
I don't know what that was. That's just hilarious. And they think they're brilliant writing this down. They're trying to come up with comparisons, and oh, it's just hilarious. So one last one. He was deeply in love. When she spoke, he thought he heard bells as if she were a garbage truck backing up.
Okay, I don't have a comment on that one.
That's public schools. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. And we have gone to public schools, and we have witnessed outside of public schools with abortion posters. And that is not made up. I mean, it's sad, but it's true. And it's funny, but it's so sad because they're doing the best they can, and that's what they come up with. And when you talk to them about heavy subjects like abortion and euthanasia and even school violence, because, of course, Columbine is right down the street. And so we've actually gone to Columbine, and we've talked about these life and death issues, and Columbine is a very privileged, rich kid kind of a school. And one of the things that I don't think I'll ever forget for the rest of my life is I was talking to this young lady, young woman, young girl, certainly wasn't a lady, at Columbine High School, and it was a rather hot day, and she was wearing a sweatshirt. And she was so adamant. She was the most adamant that abortion was wonderful and these kids are going to live in a miserable life. And it kind of hit me maybe 10, 15 minutes into talking to her, why is this girl wearing a sweatshirt? She constantly kept pulling up her sleeves on the sweatshirt, and I noticed on her left wrist was a scar where she had obviously tried to slit her own wrist. And these are privileged kids. They don't have a care in the world. They've never gone hungry in their entire life.
Well, they've never been told no.
Exactly it. They've never been told no. They've never had any boundaries. And so it's like a train that's off the track. They're out of control and they wreck constantly. And so when you see a homeschooler or you see a child that's in a good Christian school and they're on the track, they're like a train that's on the track, that they are confined, that they know their limits, they go perfectly down the track. They
function
run.
Like a well-oiled machine.
Absolutely.
The way well, kids never function like a well-oiled machine. That was kind
as
of an exaggeration.
Expect.
Yeah.
But that's the level of intelligence at some high schools. And there are exceptions to that. There are people who are very smart at public schools. They still have no morality. And morality is much more important than book learning. So...
Well, they use their intelligence to justify their immorality because they are smart and they can think things through in their frame of reference. They have themselves convinced that they have the answers.
Yeah,
and they're the wrong answers.
And those people are the ones that grow up to be ACLU lawyers.
Yeah.
So they're very smart, but they're very immoral. Now, how can I say that about the American Civil Liberties Union? And, of course, here at Bob Inyart Live, we know how evil they are. And I did want to read, there is a list put out by D. James Kennedy in Coral Ridge. And, of course, we love Dr. Kennedy on so many of the things he does, certainly in the cultural avenues of life. And so I wanted to read some of the things that the ACLU has done in court. And, of course, these are documented. These aren't just mere accusations. These are the court filings that they have put forward, the court cases that they have been involved in. And just to rattle off a few, of course, one of
What they oppose is fascinating.
Well, go ahead and read what they oppose.
Well, they oppose abstinence before marriage.
Sure.
Or abstinence sex education. They oppose God Bless America banners in school. They oppose Christian homeschooling. They oppose education vouchers. They oppose government ethics committees. They oppose legalized school prayer. They oppose medical safety reporting of AIDS, and our government's post 9/11 security measures. They oppose those. They oppose parental consent laws. They oppose pro-life demonstrations. Gee, <Yeah. laughs> didn't know that one. They oppose religious displays in public schools. They oppose sobriety checkpoints and drug searches. And they oppose the use of religious symbols for historical reasons, whatever that means.
And you can categorize every one of those by all criminals love us or the anti-Christian legions of the underworld.
Yes.
Every one of those things you just mentioned can fall into one of those two categories. And so going back to some of the things they've done in court, of course, one of their big pillars is civil liberties. So they agreed to represent pro-pedophile North American Man-Boy Love Association, NAMBLA, which we mentioned earlier, at no cost after two group members were accused of raping and murdering a 10-year-old boy. What does that have to do with civil liberties or free speech or whatever they claim to stand for? They filed a federal lawsuit to stop Gideons from giving Bibles to fifth graders. I mean, I thought they were for free speech.
That's an important issue. I mean, you can't allow a child to have a Bible. He might do something right.
Yeah. They sued the Indiana House Speaker for praying in Jesus' name during the legislative session. Again, free speech. They sued to bar dinnertime prayers at VMI, which is a military institute. They pressured the L.A. County Board of Supervisors to remove the tiny symbol of a cross from their official seal. They attacked Judge Roy Moore. And they actually made $500,000 from that. So they paid lawyers' fees and so forth.
But
to
Jason,
get that banned.
They got the tax exempt status for Satanists. Imagine that.
Well, and they, you know, the ACLU is evil. And if you don't know that the ACLU is evil, then you have no idea. You haven't been paying attention at all. So, all right, I'm done with the ACLU, because if we have to tell the audience that the ACLU is evil, They haven't been listening very long.
No, that's okay. We're in Iowa, Jason. They may not have been.
Iowa knows that.
Yeah, so. I'm sure they do.
All right. So what else? What other story do you have?
Well, I have a story that I find interesting because it kind of hits close to home with me. There's a body part harvesting company that has been closed. This company is
now. This is abortion body part harvesting?
No, this is just donors, people who donate their bodies.
Okay.
And they are collecting bones and tissues and organs in order to use them for transplantation.
Okay, so organ donors that you'd sign up with your driver's license and things like that.
Well, supposedly organ donors. Okay, yeah. But in North Carolina, a company has been closed down in the last few days because of serious deficiencies. What's happened is that the owner of the company has been manipulating the death certificates and some records on the donors. Like, they're failing to log, especially in this one case, they failed to log that a person died of cancer with intravenous drug use as a contributing factor. So this...
Their body's tainted. How can any of the body parts be any good?
Well, they're worth a lot of money. Who cares?
Hmm.
You know, this guy could be exposed to AIDS. It could be exposed to hepatitis. And then he has cancer.
Yeah, which, of course, ravishes the whole body. Who knows where and all it's gone.
And a lot of times the bones are mashed up into like a little powder, and then they make it into a paste, and they use it in dentistry, and they use it to help reconstruct joints and things. And here they're using bones that have been exposed to cancer. One in particular, not from this company, but another company that has had problems in the past. Alistair Cook, he used to do Masterpiece Theater, an elderly man, real sophisticated. He died of bone cancer. And through some investigation in his family, they found out that his body had been ravaged by a mortuary. Mm-hmm. And when they did an MRI on him, they found that he had PVC pipes in his legs instead of bones. And his bones had been stolen without the family's permission or his permission and sold.
Yeah. And so anyone out there listening, if you're on, if you have signed up to donate your organs after you die, you should get that taken off. It sounds like a very nice thing to do, but in our culture today, there's the term,
it's a business.
The term medical ethics is a contradiction in terms.
Right.
Because more and more medicine and more doctors and the periphery of the healthcare industry is just evil. The whole culture is evil, and they're not immune to it. And so we've seen the degradation of other industries, and now it's hitting the medical industry with euthanasia, and certainly abortion has had a huge impact on that, devaluing human lives. So if you have, let's say you're a dad out there and you have a wife and kids and you get into a car accident and they might be able to save you, but oh my goodness, you're an organ donor. They might not work as hard on you because they might need that liver. They might need a heart. They might need your body parts, and they might gut you like a fish in order to get it. So they don't have respect for your life. The medical community anymore does not have a respect for your life. So when you fill out that donor or the organ donor card,
you become a commodity.
Exactly. And I used to be an organ donor, and I am not anymore after hearing that. And I'm just a single guy, but still, I want to live. I got
Jason,
a lot of things to accomplish yet in life, and I don't want to be in a minor accident and have a problem where they decide, oh my goodness, he's a 30-year-old male. He's got good organs. We can gut him and we can make a lot of money off of him, or we can help a lot more people if he just happens to die.
Well, Jason, this hits real close to home with me because my brother was killed in Australia recently.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister-in-law went to see his body at the mortuary. The first day they said you can't see him. The second day they said you can't see him. The fifth day they said you can't see him. The sixth day you can't see him. The seventh day they said, oh, we cremated him.
And she never saw him in that.
Never saw him after he was killed, which was extremely traumatic to all of us.
Sure.
But knowing that these kinds of things that are happening, it may not have happened to my brother, but why do we have to deal with such horrific thoughts?
Yeah,
I mean,
you don't know anymore because the whole industry is so immoral that even if everything is done properly, you're still in the back of your mind. And it's certainly in that case where a spouse can't see
her husband
yeah. for a week, and then all of a sudden, oh my goodness, he's been cremated. Sorry, we can't help
right.
you.
Right. It was devastating.
Yeah.
I think we have a caller, Jason.
Yeah, let's go to line two in Chester. Chester, you're on Bob and You're Live with Jason and Joe.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, Joe, I had a question for you. I was listening to the first part of the show, and I had to go back to work and stuff, but
that sounds like a good
really
conservative thing.
To you? Yeah.
What?
Did that pastor really say that to you?
He said he was studying to be a pastor. He's in training. Yes, he really said that to me. Can you believe it? It's so frustrating, heartbreaking, and it's just so difficult to talk to someone like that.
Well, it's impossible because you know a guy by the name of Gary Rogers?
Gary sounds familiar, but I don't think so.
He used to, this is like about 8 years ago. We tried to overturn Clinton's veto on the partial birth abortion thing.
Oh, I do know him. Sorry. Yeah.
So we went around and signed petitions, and I got about the same thing from another pastor from a Presbyterian church when I asked him to sign it. He said that he was pro-choice and pro-life, and I said, "Now what? How can you be pro-choice and pro-life?" And he goes, "Well, I'm pro-choice for the mother and pro-life for the baby." But I can't believe
That's a brilliant statement.
Well, it really is, and I figured, you know, you can't talk to people like that either. You know, I mean, is 2 Timothy 3:1-5, is that, you know, a dominionist statement, preterist, or is that, you know, something still to come, or are we living in it now, or what? You know?
Yeah, I don't know. Not sure that I know what 2 Timothy 2:5 says. I don't have it in front of me right now.
It says in the last days people would
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
You know, we've been doing a lot of evil things for a long time. And even before America existed, we had people that were sacrificing their children to Molech and all these horrible things. Man's inhumanity to man is unspeakable, the horrible things that we have done throughout history to each other. And so I don't know if this is necessarily because of these events in the last days, because there could be so much more time, because we could have a revival in this country, have 200 years of revival, and then we could slip back down again into immorality. And the ebb and flow of society is revival and rejection, revival and rejection. And so let's not pin all our hopes on the Lord is coming soon, let's get ready, these are the last days, because there's so much more time out there to fight. What can you do tomorrow? What can you do next week? Because the Lord might come tomorrow. We don't know. So time is limited, but also let's not be so short-sighted as to say that this is the last days, we can't do anything about it, and let's just hang our hat and be done with work.
We have to understand that man is evil. He's basically evil, and it's God who changes us and makes us, anything good in us comes from him. And if we don't rely on the Holy Spirit and live for him, even if we are Christians, we're going to be evil.
All right. Well, thank you, Chester, for your call.
Okay. See ya.
Uh-huh.
And so it's amazing when you're not in the battle on a day-to-day basis, and you tell me things because you're at the clinic 5 days a week and I go down there one day a week, or I go down there for special occasions, things like that, and you tell me things that they're not unbelievable to me because I've been down there quite often, but when you relay these stories, and when we were talking years ago about harvesting baby parts, we would tell people and they would be astonished. They were incredulous to this because they weren't aware of it. But yet they hear about it and then they kind of say, you know, I have my life to continue on. And certainly you have to make a living and you have to provide for your family. But when you hear these outrageous stories, don't just sit back and say that's another bit of immorality. We need to fight. And how much immorality are you going to hear in the culture around you before you stand up and fight, before you go down to your downtown and you pass out Bible tracts and you witness to people and you write op-eds to the papers, and before you get involved, how bad does it have to get before we rise up in a certainly a nonviolent way and we fight the spiritual battle that's laid out before us?
Most people don't think that these things like abortion and the organ harvesting and all that affects them, but it does. It's affected our entire society. Look around you. 50 years ago, you would not have met kids like you meet today. And abortion is one of the root problems. The fact that we've turned against God and our back on him is probably the main problem, but in abortion a symptom. But if we don't understand that it has affected us, because people don't move usually until they think they're being affected. It has.
Yeah.
And
well,
this younger generation is going to take care of you. If you're over 40, they're going to be taking care of you. So you need to think about that.
Yeah, we were doing some show prep before the show today, talking about the increase in syphilis and gonorrhea and HPV that we discussed on the show earlier. And there was a retired gentleman in the studio who was listening in on our conversation, and he said, you know, when I was younger, we would never even talk about that.
It was whispered.
It was, and so we've hardened our hearts as a society, and in so many ways, the things that are going on television, in the movies, that was unheard of before. And one of the things that makes it acceptable, and one thing that we need to be aware of as Christians, is the rating system in movies. Everything in the movies used to have no rating whatsoever. So everything was rated G. And now there were a few movies that were a little bit more graphic and you had some
violence,
more adult themes.
Yeah.
But because there was no rating system, they couldn't get away with very much. As soon as they implemented a rating system, the justification was, this is rated R, so therefore we can allow much more. And now the same thing is happening in television. Because there's ratings at the beginning of every program that say L for language, S for suggestive dialogue, and so many other little warnings, they can say, the producers of those shows can say, we are giving you a warning. You can use your V-chip, which nobody statistically knows how to use in their television. But when you add a rating system in, that means it's going to get that much worse. And that is, we need to recognize that as Christians, that the rating systems are not designed to help parents. They are designed to help the perverts. Because when you rate something, you can say, it's not a secret. You know this is rated R. We've told you openly this is bad. This is for adult content, that sort of thing. So don't complain, you Bible-thumping Christians.
And what that does is attract anyone that's looking for those kinds of programs to the program. It lets them know right away that's on. So they're going to definitely watch that program where they might have stumbled on something halfway decent.
Yeah, and when you're out there looking for smut, when there's a suggestive title in the movie, but it's only rated PG, oh, well, that's not what I'm looking for, and you go to the rated R. Or if a child stumbles upon a rated R movie, he knows that there's adult content that he shouldn't be listening to, it, and that's that forbidden fruit, and so therefore they'll be much more likely to watch it. And it all goes back to having a rating system and justifying it. If we had Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, those types of movies, you don't need a rating system for that. You don't need to say this is graphically violent or this is sexually explicit, things like that. So when you...
It just shouldn't be on.
Yeah, when you slip in the culture and you accept things like that, it not only hurts you, or it not only hurts society, it will hurt you, and it will certainly hurt the generations to follow. Because when we legalized abortion, even if you've never had an abortion, you've had a hardening of the hearts of people in America to child abuse, to abandoning kids in dumpsters, to so many other ills, because we've devalued human beings. And when we start killing the baby boomers, which we absolutely will through euthanasia, because, well, we don't have Social Security to pay for them, and the Medicare and Medicaid and
everybody
all these government...
Everybody has a price on their head. In fact, today, that baby that died by that guy that claimed he was going to be a pastor, his reason was, I can't afford him. So he put a price on his child's head. And if you're an elderly person, there's a price on your head.
Absolutely.
You're not going to cost anybody too much.
And those that are out there supporting the abortion industry, they're the ones that are going to suffer, because their children and grandchildren that made it through the abortion Holocaust are going to be making life and death decisions for them. And so Dick Lamb, who's been a big proponent of the right to die, and he's 71 years old, he still's around. I don't know what's keeping him so long, but... because he thinks that old people are a drain on society. Those are the people that are most at risk, because they've taught their children and grandchildren life is not precious, life is not sacred, and we can take it. Now, here at Bob and Yart Live, we know that life is precious, that life is sacred, and we need your help to continue the fight to show people the difference between right and wrong. So please, we are asking you to order Bob and Yart Live material so you can get a deeper understanding of the Bible, of right and wrong, and all these cultural issues, because you have to get involved in the battle. How much worse does it have to get before you stand up and you become educated in what you need to be educated in, and you start in the battle?
Get in that culture war. Fight it before it swallows us.
Yeah, your kids are counting on you. Your grandkids are counting on you. Give us a call. Go to the website, kgov.com.